Hey, it's John from CityCast. If you're in the mood to pamper yourself a little bit this week while supporting cruelty-free products, you should check out Bon Coeur Home and Wellness. It's the best place in Portland to find everything from chic home decor to cannabis accessories. They've got a curated collection of vegan and cruelty-free home goods and wellness products because their name is French for kind heart, after all. You'll get a 20% discount on your first order when you sign up for emails this week at boncoeur.net. That's boncoeur.net and use the code BONCOEURCITYCAST20.
Today on CityCast Portland, we're talking about how Portland public schools are deciding to make up for lost class time due to both the teacher strike and severe winter weather, our never-ending utility rate hikes, and the city and county's joint plan to cut homelessness in half by, check this out, the end of 2025. Joining me on this week's Friday News Roundup are Willamette Week Potlander column author Brianna Wheeler and our very own executive producer John Atariani. It's Friday, March 15th. I'm Claudia Meza, and this is what Portland's talking about. Welcome, everyone, to the Friday News Roundup. Brianna, John, thanks for hanging out with all of us this morning.
Hello, hello.
Of course, hello.
Well, for all of our new listeners, today is the day we break down some of the biggest local stories of the week with some of the best and brightest journalists in town. But before we head over to the news, I like to take a little detour and ask our guests an opening question so people listening at home can get to know, you know, all of us just a little better.
Who are these guys?
Yeah. So today's opening question is brought to us again by listener Amber Bua, who I mentioned last week submitted a few for consideration.
Oh my gosh, Amber, thank you.
That's so cute. All right.
So what celebrity would you want to be on our Portland City Council, and which council member would they replace? Do y'all need a minute?
No.
Oh, you go ahead.
I'm good to go. This is easy. I would let Ted Wheeler just sort of like coast off into the distance. We talked with him recently. He says he's loved being the mayor, but he's ready to be done.
He's ready.
Yeah. And the celebrity that I would be Damian Lillard. Can you imagine Mayor Damian Lillard running the city of Portland? Like, who could say no to him? Who could say no?
I don't know. I think that he would wait till the very last minute to do anything. And I think that would upset me personally.
It would be like the budget is due tomorrow. And then he'd just be like.
And then he's like, Dame time. And I'm like, Dame, the time was a month ago. We're all mad. What about you, Brianna?
Wow, this is a hard one. I'm kind of into Storm Large lately. Mm.
Local celebrity Storm Large.
Yeah, she's such a badass. And I probably would replace Renee. Yeah, and she could like bring song into the chambers, bring songs and joy. You know, maybe like lift our spirits in that way.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so I kind of picked a similar choice. Well, mine would be Cardi B because,
oh, God, that's
dude,
great.
Right? She's surprisingly politically astute.
Truly, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, whenever she says stuff, you're like, wait, hold on. Let her go. Continue. I'm sorry. What are you saying? And she's hilarious. And also music.
I mean, that also gives us three musicians on city council, you know, because Dame Dalla.
Oh, I forgot. So it's going to be Dame. And then Storm Large. And oh my God, this is a super group.
Yeah. Really.
But yeah, my vote for who Cardi B would replace, it really, like, it would be up to Rene Gonzalez and Commissioner Mingus Maps to figure out who's leaving. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to make that decision. They could battle it out.
Fight, 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 fight.
Well, thank you again to Amber for her opening question. If you have one you'd like to submit, please send it over to portland@citycast.fm. All right, on to the news of the week. But before we jump in over to the headlines, Brianna, before I hand it off to you, I wanted to give a couple of updates. First, John and I wanted to thank everyone who became a founding member.
Yes. Oh, you are all amazing. Thank you so much to everybody who joined as a member of CityCast Portland. We're so grateful.
It's true. The support we were shown, like, actually, I got teary-eyed several times a day because, we, you know, as you were joining, you were basically sending us notes about why you were joining, and it made everything so real because we really, when we make this podcast, we're really just like, well, off it goes, you know? And unless you email us and you're just like, that was really dumb, we hate you about this, that's the only way I know you're listening. And I'm just like, man, they really hate us. So it was so nice to see the nice stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. It was really, really sweet. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just know that there's an email coming like sometime early next week that's going to show you where your names live on the website forever. And I will also now get to recording everyone's name whispered to a secret silent track that will be included on every show. Sorry, John, that's what's happening.
Hey, let's do it. You know, I want to brag, all right? Like, our listeners, our membership campaign was the most successful membership campaign of all the CityCasts in the entire country. The number of people who decided to become members, like, we've got the biggest pool of members out of anybody, which is amazing because there's shows that have been around for way longer than we have here on CityCast Portland.
Yeah, like 2 years longer.
Which means that, like, y'all are showing up and like supporting local media and taking part in something really special. So I just can't say it enough. All of you who are listening are awesome and thank you.
Yeah. Well, the last update is to a story we've been following and covered a couple of weeks ago on a Friday roundup. Remember the bottle drop that is set to open in St. John's? Well, there was a neighborhood association meeting to decide if they were going to vote against it or not. Over 400 people attended, which is for a neighborhood association. No, man.
That's crazy.
Both in person and on Zoom. And of the nearly 40 people that testified, which included more elected leaders than I expected, not one person was like, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So State Representative Travis Nelson showed up and was also representing Maxine Dexter. He was just like, we're trying to get it moved elsewhere. No. And then Sam freaking Adams weirdly showed up. If you don't know who that is, that's like our ex-mayor. He was like our ex for a long time. And he had to leave because of some, you know, just...
stuff.
Yeah. And he's trying. He's trying to claw his way back into local politics. But yeah, he went on the record saying that he thought it was a terrible location, but mainly he wanted to speak against the entire bottle bill system, specifically the Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative, or the OBRC. If you're not aware, the OBRC manages the day-to-day of our state's bottle bill and all the bottle drops. Technically, the bottle bill is under the OLCC, which is a state agency, but it's contracted out to the OBRC, which means that they are for-profit cooperative that pockets all the money made by the bottle bill. And he basically just came on to remind everyone knew. And finally, Commissioner Carmen Rubio also attended via Zoom to relay her office's concerns for that location and just update everyone on what they were doing. But she also shared some interesting info, which is why I wanted to do this update. According to her, the state or the OLCC didn't give the city council the heads up that they were moving forward with that St. John's location. So everyone at the city was blindsided and really surprised because they were in the middle of conversations. The mayor's office was actively speaking to the state about possible locations. So imagine like you're booking these and then they're just like, wait, I'm sorry, what? And then you hear all of St. John's yell.
Yeah.
Wow. So like, that's kind of crazy. You know what I mean?
That's so messy. Wild.
Yeah. So I'm mainly bringing this all up because after seeing that Sam Adams showed up, what's going on with the mayor's office, I was like, oh shit, this reform to our bottle bill is most definitely going to be used as a platform in our upcoming election. So buckle up, guys. Like, this is going to be a really interesting election.
Yeah, totally.
Yikes.
Well, I'm done with my updates. Brianna, take us away.
Oh, I would love to. This week, KGW's Alma McCarty reported on the school board's decision to make up class hours that were lost during January's ice storm. And Oregon requires students to have between 900 and 966 hours of instructional time, depending on the grade level. And that's per the Division 22 standards. And those are the standards that ensure that all the children in Portland schools get this kind of baseline of service. So PPS leaders had already added school days to the calendar to counterbalance the hours lost to the November strike. But then there's this big freeze in January. Now, kindergartners are short an additional 17 hours. Seniors are short an additional 24 hours. So the school board's initial plan is to cut 15 minutes of recess from the kindergartner's school day.
Oh my God.
And they're going to try to convert it into something like 20 days in April, which is 5 hours total. It's not 17 hours.
So what's the point, you know?
Yeah, right. What's the freaking point?
I'm sorry. Keep going, Brianna. I'm already like jumping around.
This is a good one. We're all going to get hot. So this is the argument, right? There's this school board meeting that just happened this last Tuesday. Now, what makes that meeting spicy was this argument made by Andrew Scott, who is the director of the Board of Education. So he suggested just straight up violating the Division 22 guidelines this year. Verbatim, he said, I think we should straight up violate Division 22 guidelines this year, end quote. And he supported that by saying that children in that age group, which I can attest to, play is just as crucial to their development than, you know, these minimum standards that the state sets. You know, honestly, yes, engaging play is as beneficial as those classroom learning hours. And maybe in some children's cases, more beneficial. So it's a robbery to take that time away from them. So Andrew Scott, director of the Board of Education, he brings forth an amendment to ditch this whole abbreviated recess plan. And that passes, all right? There's no plan for the seniors. They're doing fine. But now Portland Public Schools has to go and ask the Department of Education to do that, to waive those 14 hours of missed class time, to say, we're not attempting to fulfill this Division 22 standards anymore. And then they have to wait for the state to say, like, yes or no.
Oh, so this isn't like a done deal?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Nope.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm just as a parent who has had many like these kind of administrative meetings over how many hours a child does or does not get or what does or does not an education make, I am so fascinated to see how this plays out. I just know it's going to be, well, I feel that it's going to be really messy and that there's no easy answer to this besides like, yeah, those requirements don't really work. Well, they certainly don't work for all children. And, you know, I downloaded the actual meeting notes and one thing had me kind of shook. The high schoolers academic calendar, the shifts that would happen there as a result of all of this kind of schedule juggling and fixing, and they would need to move graduations back a week, and they would have to eat the cost of their Providence Park graduations. That's $100,000 that they would just need to eat. Can you imagine?
There's something about this that is just like the best of like malicious compliance to me, you know? It's like, oh, we need to come up with like a couple hours of instruction. Well, like, let's get rid of recess. No bathroom breaks. That takes like
fuck graduation.
Yeah. At least 3 minutes per child. Like,
and screw that. So what you're saying is they made it so terrible that of course, like the board has to be like, yeah, we can't stop. Don't do that.
Yeah. If you're making that argument to somebody who doesn't have kids, who doesn't work with children, doesn't have that experience, maybe they would be like, yeah, sure, take recess away. Who cares?
No, yeah.
But if you've met a child, then you understand how critical that time is. So that's the argument.
I feel like that was the right choice, was to basically say, hey, we're not going to take recess away, because pretty much every reputable health organization has stated how important recess is to children. Mm-hmm. Like, if anything, they're like, hey, they should have more recess because
absolutely,
it's proven to increase a child's memory, attention, concentration. Mm-hmm. It helps them like not be annoying in a classroom, in a classroom that has way too many kids with one teacher. Like, could you imagine like a teacher having to manage all of those kids who haven't gotten their Zoomies out? Oh my God.
I've got a better idea. Okay, so like 17 hours for kindergartners, 24 hours for high schoolers. Let's just pick a Friday, just lock the doors on Friday morning and just like keep them in there. We'll scatter the schools with like granola bars and like juice boxes.
Yes.
And we'll just let them learn for 24 hours straight. Then we're back on track.
No, man. We'll learn, quote unquote, let's just throw some old Degrassi High. We're talking pre-Drake.
Pre-Drake!
Yeah, when they used to do that to us. And I'm just like, why do they sound so weird? And then you're like, oh, they're Canadian. What is this all about? But no... But also, oh my God, Julia, our Canadian producer, was like, wow. Sorry, bud. No, but like Degrassi High never made sense as to why that was like educational, but whatever. I'm like, that's neither here nor there. I'm just saying, John, that's a wonderful idea.
Hey, you know, superintendent's job is coming up. Guerrero is retiring. I think I'm the guy for the job. I've got the ideas.
Yeah.
But like, seriously though, like thinking about this question of like state minimum standards for education, which like is an important thing. I think that it is good for us to have standards for kids and to make sure that, you know, because who knows what like school districts could do if those rules weren't in place. Mm. But I think this is like a very extenuating circumstance where there's been like two very major disruptions to the school year. And it seems like the solutions that are on the table create more problems than they solve at this point.
And it doesn't really take into account the inherent kind of, maybe it's kind of like a low level trauma of missing these chunks of school, missing out with your friends, missing that community aspect, and then the additional pressure that it puts on the teachers. Because when you're cut in half of recess, you're not just cutting it for the kids. That's planning time for teachers. That's rest time for teachers, too.
That's a lot of cigarette breaks.
So many cigarette breaks. And the coffee breaks. They're drinking cold coffee, and they need cigarettes.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, of course. They need the break, too. Oh, my God. Someone who does not have kids. I just...
She's like, I thought about kids and I needed a cigarette break.
I literally said zoomies about a child. That's clearly for dogs. Like,
friend, I get the zoomies.
Okay.
Zoomies are universal, I think.
Yeah. Well, do you want to say anything before we wrap up, Brianna?
I think that parents that have kids in the public school system, of course, I mean, this whole year has been like a test of our fortitude as parents. But if this provides an opportunity to kind of re-examine the way that those rules are implemented, then God, yes, let's do it. Let's re-examine these things. Let's re-examine these mandatory minimums and standardize this and standardize that, because the kids are all over the frickin' place. Teachers are all over the frickin' place. There's no one-size-fits-all solution for children for education.
Yeah.
So if this is the crack in the wall that gets us into, you know, that breaks this all up, then, you know, so be it.
Well, Brianna, thanks so much for breaking that story down. Let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, more headlines of the week. All right, John, what caught your eye this week?
Yeah, I'm going off of some reporting, mostly by Goja Wozniacka at The Oregonian, and a little bit from Courtney Vaughn at The Portland Mercury, Monica Samayoa at OPB. I've been reading a lot about utility rates in the last couple weeks and how they are all going up everywhere. PGE, the sort of main electric utility, proposed a rate increase with the Oregon Public Utility Commission a couple weeks ago. It would put rates up an average of 7.4%. But that's on top of rates last year and the year before, which means that we could see PGE power rates going up 40% since January of 2022. And it's not just them. Pacific Power customers looking at a 50% rate increase. And it's not just electricity. Northwest Natural's gas rates have gone up 32%. The Water Bureau is looking at an 8% rate hike. Like, all of these things are happening at the same time. So utility rates going up across the board. There's a bunch of reasons for this that I've been digging into as well. But yeah, what do you guys think?
Part of me is like, okay, let's just go home and die then.
Right?
Like, is that what they want? Like, I'm just like...
It's too expensive to be alive.
I know. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'll just go home and die. Like, that's, I can't afford all this.
I can't imagine, like, my water bill now... When my friends moved to Portland, I'm like, okay, I pull them aside. I'm like, okay, I just got to talk to you about what's going to happen with your water bill. Your water bill it's going to be so, you're not going to believe it. Just start saving now. Put a little money aside now. Because when it comes, I mean, what is this going to do? This now what?
Pay the money. I mean, that's it.
They got us over a barrel, folks. Like,
yeah.
God, I'm 90.
I mean, there are a lot of reasons for it, you know, like climate change is real. And there's a bunch of things, not just the fact that like it gets hotter and it gets colder. There's like all these sort of knock-on effects where like really intense weather screws up the utilities and like makes them have to spend a ton of money repairing them. And there also are these like new clean energy laws that Oregon has passed, which require these like massive reductions in carbon emissions, 100% by 2040, which is amazing. But I mean, that means that these utilities have to sort of shut down all these old, you know, coal-fired power plants and build new infrastructure. And, you know, just like as more demand, as more electric cars happen, as more like data centers come online, like there is more demand on energy as well. So, yeah, it's sort of a perfect storm of making everything more expensive for all of us.
When you mention infrastructure, do these like rate hikes, are they going to feed back into like rebuilding this infrastructure? Because it's just kind of janky, isn't it?
The utilities are talking a lot about that. Like PGE made a big point of how they're investing in sort of like new battery storage capacity for like peak hours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're all talking a lot about like just, you know, both investing in new clean energy and just repairing all of these sort of old creaky electrical lines that have existed for forever, you know. Claudia, we've talked about it up here in St. John's. We've seen some of the effects of that where our power used to go out all the time.
Oh, sure.
And over the last year, like, it's been a little bit better because they have done some repairs up here.
It is literally why I would say, I'll see you at Slim's.
Because in the first year of the show, our power would go out and we would go and finish producing the episode at Slim's.
Like, no joke.
Not an exaggeration.
That is the birth of that tagline. I'm like, I'm not an alcoholic.
I just want to finish my podcast.
Just want to finish this podcast. Okay. You know, you mentioned, John, that PGE, I saw that too, that they were like, sorry guys, climate change, you know. But I also saw that, you know, Pacific Power has a wildfire litigation bill. And,
yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, I feel like maybe their pay rate increase, which is a bit more than PGE's, might be them trying to pay that off. And don't you think that's kind of messed up? Like the people whose houses they burned down now have to pay?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm like laughing because it's so dumb.
It was a $299 million settlement for the wildfires that they were deemed liable for. And on top of that, they're creating a catastrophic fire fund to cover the utility's liability. So they're like, we got to pay this money. It's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah. Well, here's my dirty, filthy commie idea. Public ownership of public utilities.
Yes.
Okay, so public utility rates are on average about 13% lower than those of investor-owned utilities. I know that we just also said that our water and sewer, which is city-owned, you know, is going up by how much percent?
6.24% altogether.
Yeah. So a part of me wonders if, like, maybe that is the better way forward because of climate change, because we're going to have to be a lot more community focused. The only way we're going to get through climate change in late stage capitalism is mutual aid.
Yeah. It is.
No, for reals. But I know that it's just like, what if we all had cake? You know, like I'm just.
No. Like, it's not a crazy idea, Claudia. So, okay, like, we have investor-owned utilities, right? So there's these companies that own these utilities. There's an oversight commission that the state administers that decides how they can set their rates. But, like, the part of the deal is that the Oregon Public Utility Commission has to allow them an opportunity to earn, quote, a reasonable return, right? So basically, these utilities have a right to profit regardless of what happens. And at a time when like our energy stability is changing dramatically across the world, like this isn't a thing that we should be profiting from. This is a thing that we should be investing in and that we should be like using for the welfare of all people. I totally agree. I don't think it's a crazy commie idea.
Thank you. Here's my other side of that coin. You guys know about the Portland Utility Board. So PUB was specifically created in 2015 for oversight of public ratepayers of Portland's water and sewer utilities. So that's PUB. And PUB has been riding the water and sewer hikes and just being like, you know what? They're not giving us any lead time to review the water and sewer utility budgets. So we can't, it's so opaque here that we can't even like recommend or say this is a good idea. Mm-hmm. So basically they're saying the city is being shady. That's what they're saying. I'm not saying that. PUB is like, hey, man, we don't understand why this is raising. They're like skeptical.
Ooh.
That about the long-term sustainability of the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Service or sewer system, basically. They're just like, hey, they're not letting us see their finances. I'm worried.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you guys know about the city, but we have a terrible time of keeping to budget and like actually being sustainable, you know?
Yeah. Well, isn't part of the problem there, though, that last year the mayor pushed a bunch of freezes on like certain utility bill increases into the city budget? This was sort of a controversial thing. Like Mingus Maps was opposed to it. But like what some of these agencies were saying was that like, yeah, it's great to sort of like freeze these cost increases, but like that is going to put these departments' budgets in jeopardy as well. So like, yeah, I mean, it's like a sort of, you know, paradox across the board. Like if we don't invest in these things, these services fall apart. If we do invest in them, ratepayers pay more. I don't know what the solution is.
Brianna, what do you think we should do?
I think that we should terraform the garbage patch and just go move there.
The garbage patch?
Yeah, the Pacific garbage patch. Let's terraform that shit. And then let's go colonize it.
I don't see how that solves any of the problems that we're talking about right now.
Anything.
But I'm on board. Yeah, let's go.
Let's just go give up and live on a garbage island.
Oh, I see, basically.
Shuffling off all of these society constraints and we're terraforming. We're going to just go live on the garbage island.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I love this.
No worries.
Anytime I hear something that I think is, like, unmovable, I'm going to be like, fine, I'm just going to move to garbage island then.
That's it. That is my solution to everything.
Well, what if this is Garbage Island?
We have Garbage Island at home, Brianna.
We're not driving all the way to your Garbage Island. We got Garbage Island at home. I love that. Oh, my God. All right. Well, my story this week, I dug into some reporting from OPB's Alex Zielinski and Joelle Jones from COIN and Willamette Week's Sophie Peel. You guys might have heard it already, but in a Monday morning press conference this week, leaders from the Portland and Multnomah County laid out steps for their latest homelessness response action plan. And their goal is, are you guys ready? Their goal is to reduce unsheltered homelessness by 50% by the end of 2025. But here's the deal. If you were alive in 2015, Portland and the county had already declared a housing emergency and promised the same thing. Sorry.
I was going to say, like, wow, why haven't we thought of this before?
I know. We should have just halved it 10 years ago. Well, here's the deal. Now, of course, the pandemic happened. A lot of stuff happened. But nearly a decade later, the county's homeless population has tripled to more than 11,000 people. Mayor Wheeler and Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson said the incorporation of behavioral health and actionable goals set this plan apart from others in the past. They're like, no, but see, we're actually going to do it this time. So the new plan commits to housing or sheltering nearly 2,700 people over the next 2 years, in addition to creating 1,000 new shelter beds in the next 2 years. And it also, and this is their piece, this is what they're like, hey, no, see, this is different. Remember with John, when I was just like, you know what the city needs? And I kept talking about like, behavioral health and like psychiatric holds or whatever, which by the way, I rethought. It's just like, we're going to just start putting people on hold. Anyhow. But like, they're just like, we're going to add hundreds of more behavioral health beds and open a drop-off sobering center, which is like what people have been asking for.
Yeah.
And they're going to increase the number of adults leaving shelters for permanent homes by 15%. And they're going to ensure that 75% of people in permanent supportive housing stay in homes for 2 years. So that means that they're going to like, it's a program that's going to continue in the life of this person. So they're not just like back in the street, because that pipeline of setting someone up to fail is why we keep coming back here, you know, to this issue. They're also targeting certain groups of homeless people, like people of color, people who identify as LGBTQIA+, because they tend to be more vulnerable. And they're also going to end all discharges from behavioral health and corrections facilities to the streets, which is how we got here in the first place.
Finally.
In the 80s. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is what started all this. And they're like, we're going to increase affordable housing opportunities so people don't end up on the street because they can't afford stuff. And they said they're going to better define responsibilities. and contributions needed from community partners to address homelessness. All I read here is like, we have a plan and we're actually going to delegate and we're not going to sit on money.
I love that there's numbers. I love that there's a lot of numbers attached to this, that like, yes, by December 2025, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Like, in contrast to the 90-day fentanyl emergency, which was basically like, we're going to have a command center and get along real good and figure it out, where they didn't even have coffee, which we learned in our interview with Mayor Wheeler. They don't even have coffee there. Like, how are they going to get anything done?
He's like, I have to buy my coffee.
I'm glad there's actually some like concrete numbers attached to this plan as well.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Brianna, what do you think?
Well, of course, I'm skeptical because it's just a lot of like, well, I've heard that before. We'll see when we get there. I mean, is there any kind of like citizen oversight board going to be attached to this at all? It's like, who's keeping these people honest?
It's us now. It's
three of us.
Oh, no. Just the three of us.
It's you, me, and Claudia, Brianna.
Just the three of us on Garbage Island trying to navigate this.
Don't bring Garbage Island into this. That's a beautiful sanctuary.
I'm sorry. You're right, Brianna. I totally did not use that in the correct context, and I apologize.
So one of the things that Alex said in her reporting is that like the new plan is going to rely on the Joint Office of Homeless Services along with some other agencies, and that Jessica Vega Peterson says this is the biggest change from the 2015 plan. Well, if you remember, this office has not done a great job. There was a 2023 audit that said homeless service providers described this joint office as a, quote, confusing and chaotic organization, one that struggled to pay providers in a timely manner. Less than half of the providers said that they felt the office did a good job communicating policies or goals. So that's who's in charge now, everybody.
Yeah. Well, you know who's for it? So far, City Commissioner Carmen Rubio, Renee Gonzalez expressed their support, along with County Commissioners Julia Brim Edwards and Lori Stegman. Guess who's not for it, John?
Are you going to tell me about the Sherrod Mirren?
It's County Commissioner Sherry Mirren, who's becoming my favorite foil. I just love like hearing, you know, because she's like so like fucking idiots. Okay,
bury that. Yes.
Are we just gonna say Sherrod Mirren quotes back and forth at each other for a couple minutes?
I love. She's so spicy. Okay. She said that the plan reads more as political theater than a solution. And she wrote, the current plan is more about marketing than solving homelessness. The only thing it will accomplish is holding more meetings while people continue to die on our streets. I challenge my colleagues to have the political courage to take a stand and not continue to go along to get along.
Dang. Okay, can I do one?
Okay, yeah, of course, yeah. Of course, me, Brianna, you can do one too if you want.
If you were given the keys to a new car and one quarter of the time it'll get you home, but three quarters of the time you will end up dead, would you turn the key? That's what the Homeless Response System Action Plan is asking us to accept, and I don't.
Wow.
Brianna, do you just want to make one up? Because I'm sure you're going to nail it, because I think you've got the vibe.
Oh, now these freaking idiots. I could do this with my eyes closed. What's wrong with you? I think that's the vibe.
That's actually in here, yeah.
That's the next one. I'm like, that was word for word.
Yes.
But here's the deal. I'm optimistic. I'm hoping, I did list off a few things. I really do think it's key that they're like actually saying, hey, we're all going to work together this time. We're all figuring it out. I do think that the behavioral health beds and the sobering center is massive. That is like what was needed, what was missing, because people would get placed somewhere and then they would go back on the streets. This isn't me speculating, by the way. This is what we were hearing from people at Blanchet House, at organizations that were just like, hey guys, housing is great. Everyone needs housing. Yes. But there are some homeless people that need a bit more before we could put them in housing, or else it's not gonna stick. And that's what I was talking about midweek, where I was just like, damn, we need like one more thing. Which is, of course, people a lot smarter have been thinking about. Hopefully this actually all works out. Yeah. So yeah, John. I mean, I know we just like took the piss out of it, but like,
you know,
I'm still hopeful.
No, I'm still hopeful too. And like, I'm encouraged by the fact that there are like numbers and clear goals attached to this plan. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that there are city leaders that are willing to sort of stand up and like try and point out deficiencies in like the plans that are happening. Like, there's plenty to laugh about here, but I think that like on the whole, this is a lot of like good forward momentum that we don't often see.
Yeah. And Multnomah County Commissioner Sharon Mirren, please continue to talk.
Oh, my
oh
gosh.
God,
just
yes.
speak to the press. just go for it.
You have our ear, Sharon.
Well, you guys, thank you so much for hanging out with me, going through some of these headlines. And I hope that everyone has a wonderful weekend.
Well, thanks, Claudia.
Thanks for having me.
See you on Garbage Island. That's all for today here on CityCast Portland. Thank you so much for listening. Our executive producer is John Atariani. Our producers this week were Julia Fiaioni, Natalie Rivera, and A.K. Almuman. Our newsletter editors were Rachel Monahan, Adrian Gonzalez, and Natalie Rivera. Our host is me, Claudia Meza. Original music by Jenny Conley and Steven Drizos. Additional music by Epidemic Sound and All the Kimonos. We'll be back Monday morning with more from around the city. Until then, see you at Slim's.